You're listening to the USCA official podcast, which takes you behind the scenes of eventing, covering all the big events, professional tips and tricks, interviews, special guests, and the latest USCA eventing news. Welcome to the USCA official podcast, episode 281. And listeners, it is here. The build-up to Kentucky has started. We are, by the time the show goes out, gosh, about 10 days before the first day of dressage. And it is a moment that we can all take to say, right, let's get excited, because we aren't going to do a preview show as such, but we're going to talk about Kentucky, our favorite memories of Kentucky, and also a little bit about what to look forward to this year and a bit of what it's like behind the scenes as well. I will start by saying a very big hello. Max, how are you?
I'm very well, Nicole, and you?
Yeah, good, actually. Good. Can't complain. I'm so excited at the prospect of a five-star. I might be an ocean away, but I will be watching and following. Giddy is a very good word to describe me, actually. Yeah. Rob, are you also giddy?
I'm very giddy. Spring is in the air. Happy, healthy, and half vaccinated. So I feel pretty good.
Yes.
living the dream, Rob. Finally completing my three excellent guests to talk about Kentucky. Dee, how is life at Echo Ratings in Sunny Island?
Life is good, Nicole. A third giddy little goat to join the team. Yeah, it's all good. The sun is shining. It's cold, but it's nice, and eventing is back. So we've all had a little bit of energy return to us, I suppose, as a semblance of normal life is back, and it all feels like brighter days ahead. So yeah, what are we, a couple of weeks away from Kentucky? Probably less by the time this podcast is out. So yeah, it's an exciting time.
It's good times. Okay, so let's start with memories of Kentucky. I have to admit, it's an event that is on my bucket list. I am yet to make it to Kentucky, but soon, next year maybe. However, I've watched it a lot over the last few years, and I've enjoyed a little bit of British success. I'm not going to lie, listeners. Let's pick our favourite moments before we talk about 2021. Max, I mean, I imagine you've been to, firstly, a good number of Kentuckys on the ground, behind the scenes. Just give us an insight into what it's like behind the scenes, because you're in the hub.
Yeah, it's exciting, you know, and it's pulling into the horse park when you're going there for the 3-day event it's still always sort of is so exciting when you drive in there. I mean, I'm there a lot in the summers to do the jumpers, but when you pull in there for Kentucky, it's pretty cool, because the getting there is half the battle, right? You just even getting in the driveway, you've worked so hard and so long to get there, and then when you pull in with your horses ready to go, it's, you know, everybody's, it's a fresh start, you're starting, and we're all competing together, and there's a lot of energy in the barns, and it's pretty cool. You know, you maybe you're stable next to someone you don't know very well, or, you know, from across the country, and that's pretty cool too, and you get to know them because you're all in it together. So it's pretty cool. It's intense, but it's pretty great at the same time. It's fun. It is fun. It's stressful, but it's great.
I was going to say, do you feel the nerves as well?
Well, it's funny, when I was working full time, looking after Karen O'Connor's horses full time, then yeah, it's very stressful, because it's been your responsibility to get them there and all that. And when I'm now freelancing, I sort of, you know, arrive, and yes, there's a lot of pressure, because you are looking after horses that are there to compete at the highest level and all that. So there is a lot of pressure and just, you know, trying to keep the horses routine, normal, look after them the best you can and all that. But you're not as emotional about it. As I say, I sleep really well on Friday nights now at Kentucky, where used to be, you know, because these are your kids and the horses that you looked after for the years and years and years leading up to Kentucky, and to know they're going out the start box is very nerve-wracking. But, you know, at the end of the day, I get to walk away, which is, you know, in some ways is the good news and the bad news, because when your horses are so good, you get such a feeling of pride and accomplishment when it's your horses that you looked after. And that is something that I do miss at the end of the weekend. It's such a it's a little bit of a reward for all your hours and days of hard work when your horses do well and they come through it well and they're successful. It makes you remember why you stayed up late and got up early. So I do miss that a little bit, but at the same time, there's also part of me that really kind of likes sleeping on Friday night.
Yeah. Can you give us a little bit of behind the scenes insight into what it's like, on the ground, what facilities you have, how the horses stabled in the barn, like all of those kinds of things that perhaps people watching at home or that are on the ground watching as a spectator wouldn't always see? Because I always find that bit fascinating because they differ massively.
Absolutely. And we're always in the barns that are like barns 11, 12, 10, 11, 12, which is just behind the show office there. And they've got that all fenced in. And you just sort of get there and, the barns are, they're wood. And so you remember things like bring your screw eyes because you can't hang your buckets with baling twine, so there's little details that you sort of remember as you go along the way. And the horse park's good enough to put rubber mats in the stalls for the Kentucky horses, which is really nice because it's usually on tarmac. It's the barns are kind of a nice safe place for the horse, especially when there are spectators. Everybody has to have a credential to get in and out, an ID credential to get in and out or to get in. And there's a lot of energy. I'll say it's interesting on say like a Saturday, the barns are quite busy in the morning and there's a volume level and energy level until about 9:40 when the first horse is getting ready to go out on course. And then at 9:55, the whole place goes silent because everybody's either down at the tent watching in the start box area or they're in the show office watching the first horse go. And it's really quiet until the last horse goes. And then the volume level in the barns go back up again because everybody's returned back to the barns. And it's something so very noticeable. You can't believe it. And it's and then it obviously goes quiet again as the night wears on. But there's definitely a funny aura about that day, especially early in the morning on a cross country morning. It's unique. But it's the barns are kind of fun. I mean, it's a nice place. We just usually hang out. We try to get the horses out for as much grass. That Kentucky bluegrass is growing heavily by then. So a lot of times as the grooms will get out and get the horses out first thing in the morning. And we solve a lot of the world's problems out there, hand grazing with a cup of coffee, which is great. And, we'll be out there for quite a bit and then switch off. And then, they always have coffee and some, I don't know where the bakery is, but these donuts appear in the show office. So if anybody's ever there, they have these killer donuts. There's something about Kentucky during the 3 day that's not like a Burley or a Blenheim or a Badminton or anything. It's very different. It is nice to be away from the crowds, which I will say for the horses' sake. And then you walk out there, you're hand grazing, you see the cross country course and you think, yeah, right, all right, good thing I'm just holding these guys and not riding them. You're feeling pretty happy about that too. So we all the grooms sort of spend more time together, which is nice. We get to have a bit more time to hang out because a lot of times at the events leading up to it, it's sort of we're as quick as we can just flat out the whole time. So it's good to be able to do that and wander through the trade fair, have a little bit of a shop, which is actually kind of a fun thing to do. We try to get that done. And then a lot of us try to on either the Thursday night or the Friday night after we're done for the day, we all try to go for a little course walk and have a wander around the track just to see what's what, bring maybe a hydrating beverage with us and have a little bit of a course walk, which is kind of fun. Yeah.
Oh, it sounds ideal. And the camaraderie between you guys is incredible. We got a bit of an insight in the Top Tips, Top Groom show listeners, which was the last episode where Max, Emma Ford and Alex Van Tool were all, talking and answering your questions. But it's very evident that everybody works together and supports each other. And it's a real family and a community, which is what I think makes eventing so special in so many ways. Rob, how about you? Let's talk favorite Kentucky memories, because I'm sure there have been many. Have you got a starting point for us, something that stands out for you or that you really think reminds you of Kentucky?
Sure. So I'll say I'm going to come at this two directions, personal and then just as a fan. I've been to Kentucky I've never ridden there, obviously.
Rob, but,
well, I've ridden in horse trials, but not the problem. But I've been there in like every other capacity as a groom, as a volunteer, somewhat official these days, and as a fan. But probably the best personal experience, and Max was actually there, and she probably doesn't even realize this, but I was there with my kids and my wife. And we were in the kiss and kiss and ride or something. It's in the show.
Kiss and cry. You either that's kissing it. People because everything went well, or you're crying because it went bad.
So I'm standing up there with my daughters. You know, they're young and little fans of the sport, and really someone I've known since he was a little tiny kid. Bobby Meyerhoff was competing. I think Max might have even been helping him out that year. And it was just, I mean, I'll never forget that. I probably watch my kids more than I watch Bobby, so I'm sorry to Bobby, but but that was pretty amazing.
Sorry, we got you guys up onto the booth. I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then from a like competitive fan standpoint, it was seeing probably the most amazing athletic feat of my life to witness was Teddy O'Connor competing there. Was just with Karen, it was just amazing.
Yeah, he's remarkable. I'm actually going to Google. Max, you probably looked after him. How big was he? He was tiny. He was a pony.
14-1. He was 14-1.
That's just insane. So how long ago are we talking for Teddy O'Connor? What year would that have been?
He did 2007 and 2008.
For me, it was 2008, and I was there again with my oldest daughter. And I remember, like, on cross country with my oldest daughter, she's 2 years old, on my shoulders, watching this tiny little pony navigate these fences that are larger than both my daughter and I combined. And oh, it's just incredible. Very cool. And now Emma is competing in eventing. So it's just amazing.
It is incredible. Dee, how about you from Kentucky Memories? I know you and I had this conversation. I think you're going to say Mark, the one that I thought of. So we might have to...
I don't. Oh, I don't know that I am. No.
Okay.
No, I don't think I am. No, I think what really comes across listening to Max and Rob, and obviously I've been there, but much more recent. I'm not as steeped in it, and I kind of come in from an outside point of view. And obviously even to eventing, I come into it from an outside point of view. So what do you see and what do I remember from it? Like, I think what comes across from when you hear Rob talking about it, and you can hear just thinking about Teddy O'Connor, just thinking about having your two-year-old kid on your shoulders as you go around, walking around with, you know, your friends and your colleagues when you're walking around with your friends and your colleagues while you're kind of also at work there. It is a feeling that you're trying to capture and somehow put into words when you're talking about Kentucky. And that was when I think about it, that's what I think about. That same as driving into any big 3 day or a 5 star, there is a particular feeling. And I'd never been to Kentucky before. So when I went, everything I knew about it had come from Jenny Autry. And when I went, it was Samantha Clark and Jenny who basically like showed me, here's what happens. And like, could you find two better people to kind of take you around Kentucky from the minute you go into the horse park to saying like, this is how this works, this is how that works. I suppose over the last probably 4 or 5 years, Nicole, I have firstly found eventing and then secondly found US eventing. And when you get to Kentucky, that's essentially the, you know, one of the great centerpieces of it. So you meet everybody there, like names that I had just seen as bylines up until that point. Like there's Leslie Wiley sitting there writing for Eventing Nation. Up until that point in my life, Leslie Wiley was just a name at the bottom of an Eventing Nation article that wasn't Jenny. And then I learned that actually at Kentucky, like Chinch from Eventing Nation has his own party, which is wild enough. And it goes on for like more than, you know, it goes on for a day and a night, essentially the whole thing. And it's quite involved. The size of the whole thing, I remember, is so different from the other events. Like probably Aachen is the only stadium that I've been to that can match it in terms of size. But Kentucky's even more kind of enclosed in that it's much higher, whereas Aachen is kind of big and wide. And when you go in there, I don't know. I just remember being so blown away by the size of the whole thing. Essentially, if you think about badminton and Burley, they're so reflective of kind of British equestrian, everything you'd expect. You know, there's loads of tweed and loads of dogs. And then when you go into Kentucky, it's like everything you'd expect from America. Like, it's massive. And everybody's got their baseball caps on. And it's just the heart and soul of U.S. eventing.
And so you can get a corn dog.
You can, oh, I remember Chick-fil-A.
Yeah,
I've never even
corn
heard
dogs.
Of it. But there it is in the stadium. And you just, like, we don't have anything like that. So yeah. I just remember the size, the scope, the excitement. I'd never been there before. And I went to the, I got picked up in the airport from Jenny. And I remember, like, whatever, she was 20 minutes late. And I was like, oh, don't worry, don't worry. And I went into the bar in the airport and the girl was like, oh, where are you from? I was like, oh, I'm from Ireland. She thought this was great. And she was like, what beer do you want? I was like, I don't know, American beer. And she goes, okay, here's like Sam Adams. And I was sitting on my own in an airport drinking Sam Adams. I thought I was in a film. But anyway, it's just a
feeling. Thank God she didn't make you drink Budweiser.
I knew that one. The King of Beers, I said.
Yes.
No, she gave me Sam Adams and I loved it. But what I'm getting to, I suppose, Nicole, is the same. Every event in lots of countries have this, but this is the one, I suppose, in the US. It was a feeling that I'd never seen and experienced. And it's very hard to put into words as to what the sporting memory is because there's so many. But the emotional feeling that you get is a unique thing that I think all of us will feel differently as soon as you go into the horse park. You think, okay, this is it. I get it a little bit now.
Yeah, and I think everything over the last 12 months has made us appreciate that feeling even more, even if you're watching it at home, even if it's just listening to this podcast, talking about Kentucky and kind of getting that behind the scenes insight and all of those things. Actually, it is so special and we're so lucky to be able to enjoy it and be part of it and live it, no matter what sort of way you do live it, whether you're there, whether you're watching it, whether you're going for the first time, you go every year, whatever it be, it just is special. I have a photograph that is one of my favorite memories, actually, of Kentucky. And I don't know why it always sticks out in my mind. And it was the year, I think it was 2013. And it was Andrew Nicholson on Kimbo jumping into the head of the lake. And I'm sure you would be able to find it if you Google it. But he has one hand off the reins, just really casually, just jumping into one of the most iconic fences in eventing. And he looks like he is out for a country stroll in the park. And it is just one of those that you just, the horsemanship on display was incredible. He won it on I think the horse was a 5-star first timer. It was part of a sort of a campaign for Andrew at the time that was exceptionally special for him. We actually spoke about it on the Eventing podcast recently with Andrew and kind of he was winning everything. He was full of confidence. And it was just everything about that photo just looked amazing. The horse was happy. He made it look so easy and it's not. So I always remember that photo. But I think it would be remiss of me not to say that one of my favorite Kentucky memories is actually my idol. So I grew up thinking that this person was, like, I mean, I had posters on my wall. I basically fangirled over her when I was a small child growing up. She's the reason for my love of eventing, basically. Mary King, her 1-2 in 2011. And it was around the time, Dee, I don't know if you'll remember, but she became female world number one, which was a big deal. And she had come back from, you know, she'd broken her neck. She'd had plenty of ups and downs. She'd come from a really sort of a humble eventing story as a child. And she'd come over to America. She had a 1-2 and the horse on whom she won was homebred, was King's Temptress. And it just, you know, it's special, isn't it? They're the kind of the memories that stick out. I love Mary King.
The British girls can't decide who they love more, whether it's Pippa or Mary King. But it's a massive, like, if Mary King has made a memory at any venue that we've ever previewed, Mary King or Pippa will usually rise to the top. But she was world number one at the end of that year. She was the only female world number one up until Roz Kanter did it for a month in 2019. 2019. So yeah, a very special year, and she counted her two Kentucky results as part of that kind of journey to world number one. If you want a sneak preview, there's an article which is going to come out in the USEA magazine at the Kentucky issue, which will be released, I think, towards the end of May. However, the Ek Ratings article this time around is all about Kentucky, the world number ones. And the interesting piece is that every world number one over the last decade has always included their Kentucky result as part of their journey to world number one. Essentially, Kentucky is where the world number ones are made. We haven't yet had a world number one who hasn't included their Kentucky result. So you can think back, think of your Michael Young years with Rakana results, your Oliver Townend recent years. William Fox Pitt is in there. Andrew Nicholson is in there. Mary King is in there. We haven't yet had a world number one. Tim Price. We haven't yet had a world number one who hasn't included their Kentucky result. So it's a landmark venue in terms of that journey as well, the FEI world number one journey. But more to come. I shouldn't be giving away the secrets. My team who at home will not be happy with me, and I'm sure the USEA team will not be too happy with me either, but it's a sneak preview.
It's an exclusive, Nicole.
It's a teaser. Is that what they're called?
Teaser. Go and read the magazine out end of May. Let's talk a little bit about this year and kind of what's in store, because obviously, you know, we're not going to pick out winners as such, but we can talk a little bit about the excitement and the kind of the key ones to watch, and I guess what it takes to win in Kentucky. Dee, have you got any Ek Ratings facts and figures or little teasers that our listeners can look out for? You know, I love to throw this question at you.
You do. And actually, I took a look at all my notes this morning and I had a chat with the team about it. And then I was kind of like, God, it feels like I've kind of said all this before. And I presume we previewed this exact event last year and then didn't essentially get any value for it. So I'm wondering, like, have we had all of our memories? Have we, like, it was essentially, if anybody has heard all this before, I'm afraid it's because of the lost year in our lives. So we're not necessarily sure if this has happened. However, nothing has changed other than one major change, which is that those US horses have had another year on the journey, another year of preparation. And I don't think that will do them any harm. A lot of them have come on again from that. You don't want me to talk about favorites. You do want me to talk about sort of what it takes to win. It's not that much different, Nicole, to your traditional, how do you win a very big competition? You got to start somewhere below 30. If you can't get a dressage test below 30, it's probably not going to be a venue where the weather and the hills make it difficult enough that loads of people will come back from a time perspective. Some people will have time penalties, but it is usually possible for the top boys to get somewhere close to the time. So I don't think I think there's a few of them that are able to go into those kind of mid-20 scores. So you can think who your dressage leaders. You wouldn't be surprised to see Marilyn there. Liz could be there. Oliver, obviously, would, you know, at the moment we're looking at maybe Cooley Masterclass, maybe Ballymore Class, maybe Tregilder. Tregilder known for his speed, but the other two already hold 5-star records in terms of their dressage. So Ballymore Class, you know, we've seen Ballymore Class badminton delivering those massive dressage tests. So all of those lads are able to go low in the dressage. I think you need to be somewhere in that mid-20s to 30 at a push in terms of what you deliver. I think 9 of the last 10 have all finished. The winners have all finished below 30. You do need to be reasonably fast. You obviously need to be clear cross country. And show jumping. Show jumping, as I'm sure Max and Rob will talk about, it's a completely different beast here. The pressure, it is a pressure cooker. It'll be really interesting this year, kind of behind closed doors, as to what that feels like, because it doesn't necessarily mean, as we've seen in loads of sports over the last few months, it doesn't necessarily make it easier. It makes it completely different as a challenge to jump in an empty stadium as opposed to jumping in a full stadium. So, but in short, Nicole, you need to jump clear. I think Oliver Townend, looking at the current set of entries, will have a really strong hand with Masterclass and Ballymore Class if they do go there. But the exciting and the interesting piece, I would say, is I think every one of those US horses has come on from any potential conversation we had last year. I said last year might be the year that we finally see that, I suppose, long run of non-US winners come to an end. I think that's even more likely this year. Maybe you've got to look at the Oliver situation as to how strong he is. But right now you've got Will Coleman, Liz Halliday, Philip Dutton, Boyd Martin, Doug Payne, Lynn Szymanski. There is a long list. You know, you're still leaving people off that list. Lauren Nicholson. Like, there is 5, 6, 7 US riders all piling up, all with big chances here. And I don't think we could necessarily have said that another year. So 4-star there, a 5-star there, I expect in the big, strong US challenge this year.
I think one of the things I'm most looking forward to this year, and we've heard it on the team talk shows with Eric Devander and Jenny Autry, is basically any US combination that is looking for team selection this year is going to Kentucky for the 5-star, and they are all being pitted head-to-head against each other. And do you know what? The way to get better is to go up against the best, and they are all, you know, under pressure. They're all looking to really deliver that big result because an Olympic ticket could be on the line. And I really love that, because I think that's when people perform at their best, and that's when they exceed their personal bests and deliver those really, really memorable moments. I'm fascinated to see who will be on a plane heading over, because there are all kinds of rumors flying around, listeners, as who will be and who won't be. You know, it's not easy with coronavirus, and it's not easy with the EHV virus and all of that. So there have been a lot of moving parts to make it happen. But I think, Dee, you are right. I would say that there is a very, very good chance of a US winner. And it would be a good feeling, Rob, wouldn't it?
It would. Yeah. And I'd say I'm a total homer. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that term, but meaning like I only really pay attention to my local, the local. So for me, you know, and when I say local, I mean US. I often feel ignorant when I'm talking about international competitors, but from an American standpoint, I really do feel so good about this year. And I'm sure I said the same thing leading into last year. But especially, you know, we've got, as you were saying, Dee, we've got riders and horses who are in those 20s. You know, we've got the Tammy Smith, the Liz Hallidays, the Marilyn Littles, and Boyd Martin. I mean, all four of them coming in, I'm feeling really good about going head to head with just about anybody. It's you know, and I was looking at some of the prep runs, so the events that happened a few weeks back leading up. And what I really liked was those riders who maybe went to the big events, went to the Fork at Tryon, went to a couple other Carolina, went to Red Hills, et cetera, Stable View, and maybe took their foot off the gas a little bit to because it's obvious they are so focused. And when I say take the foot off the gas, I think everybody knows, just they weren't necessarily going to get zero time penalties, but they were clean, clear, and had a really nice round. We've got a bunch of those American pairs that just look like they're coming in fresh. And then from a total homer standpoint, Emma Klugman, who's a local Maryland rider, totally excited to see her out there getting around. Super horsewoman. Just, you know, I'm giddy. Like we said, giddy.
This, we're going to have to work giddy into the show somehow, into the title. The one thing I would say, actually, Robin, talking about US combinations coming in here, they all feel like they are hitting their peak as they go to Kentucky. There's been a lot of combinations that have been very eye-catching. You know, pretty much everybody I think has had the prep that they would have wanted. You know, events have all been running. They've been really competitive. You know, it's been brilliant to see in it. And I think, you know, we all kind of need a little bit of good luck and favor on our side as we head into the 2021 sort of thick of the eventing season. Before we wrap up the show, one thing that I can't resist. I'm going to ask you who wins Kentucky 2021. D, I'll ask you, who wins it?
I think it's so, okay, this sounds, it's dependent on who goes, obviously. I mean, can't ignore the fact that we can't be sure what Oliver horses are there yet. So, like, if Ballymore Class is there, he's the favorite. If Ballymore Class is not there, I would say it's a head-to-head battle between Cooley Masterclass and My Bomb. With Tammy Smith and My Bomb. Maybe with De Niro Z, Liz Halliday. I mean, incredible season last year, coming back to back it up. With Marlon Little and Orav Scandalous, with Philip Dutton and Z. I wouldn't write off Will Coleman if it gets a bit fast. I think Will Coleman and Off the Record are like really close to it. And Setzerleg, of course. So what I think is interesting, what I said to you before we started the show, and I genuinely feel, I think the prices, they will be in the top 10. William Fox Pitt will probably be there, I think, you know, and he will get a lot of coverage as a former winner, as a world number one, as a man who's won more five stars than any other rider in the world ever. So they all deserve their coverage. However, I think, as I say, there is six or seven US riders who will make up the top 10 at least. I think there is not that much between them, which is what makes it so interesting. To give you an answer, if Ballymore Class goes, I think he wins. If Cooley Masterclass goes, I think it's a head-to-head battle between himself and My Bomb. I'll go My Bomb to win, Masterclass second, De Niro Z third. Will Coleman, if there's any kind of question marks on time, I think Will Coleman could go and give us a podium finish at a minimum. So, wide open, Nicole. Usually I can be a lot more definite. What I'm telling you this year is bring a US flag in your backpack or put it somewhere around you, because you don't want to be on the train too late when a US winner wins Kentucky. I would say get ready for the train now.
I would say, actually, I was really interested by this. I was just scrolling through the Equa Ratings Prediction Centre. Now, Boyd Martin and Setzerleg, who I would say are one of the favourites to be going to Tokyo in the summer. They were runners-up at Kentucky the last time it ran in 2019. You have to scroll down the Prediction Centre a little bit to find them. Now, that to me just screams, I mean, they're still within the top 10 ranked horses on the Prediction Center, but there are others ahead of them. And that just screams to me the quality of this field. And, you know, don't discount the quality and the display of eventing that we're going to see. It's going to be really exciting. Max, Rob, do you want me to put you on the spot and say pick a winner? Is that a bit unfair?
They could kind of hint at a winner, couldn't they?
I agree with Darren, like a lot of it's going to be who gets on the plane. I would say another person that's been super consistent this year, she's probably not going to win it, but probably be solidly in the top 10, is Jenny Brannigan. She's been very consistent. Her horses are on really good form. She's riding really well. Laura Nicholson will be, because she is, like Rob said, she does not pull the trigger until it's time to pull the trigger, with the Vermiculous horse, because he has been in the top five. And Lauren herself knows that land pretty well. She's been second there a couple times. Will Coleman, I never knock him out, because he is, like you said, one of the fastest cross-country riders out there. And he's an exceptional show jumper too. So he's got that. And again, like it could be anybody's. I mean, there's at the end, you know, it's always who makes the least amount of mistakes. So it's going to be whoever really brings it and does it. And if Cooley Masterclass shows up, then it's kind of, you know, he's sort of the favorite, isn't he? But the rest of it is, just seeing where all the cards fall at the end of the weekend.
Are you nervous, Max? Like, are you kind of thinking, okay, now is the chance? It's kind of like, I'm sure we're going to ask you this before Tokyo, but like, it has been too long a wait for a country of such US, of such eventing pedigree to win the big one. Like, it isn't just dependent on who gets on the plane, because now you have the talent again, and it does come in cycles. But I wonder, are you a bit nervous? Because like, now's the time, you know. Like, there was other times you could say, well, look, the talent, just we're in one of those cycles, but now we're at the peak, here we go, like this is the time for a winner.
Yes, you just want to yelp and be like, just don't screw it up. You know, I use other words, but we're on a podcast, so I'm not supposed to.
I will say I am not nervous. So I am the ultimate jinx, so I will not pick a winner because, for example,
pay Rob not to pick them.
Pretty much. Exactly. I picked poor Liz Halliday and De Niro Z to win Trine, and they had, what, the last rail?
The last rail down.
So that is not good for anyone. But I will say I am not nervous about American Win.
Nervous. You're confident.
Confident. We're gonna have.
I think it's gonna be a great competition. The horses are, they're well, they're fresh. Everybody, they've done a everybody sort of has redone their program a bit so the horses don't compete as much. So they're all really sound. They're really fit. They're all really prepared. So I think it's going to be anybody's game. It's going to be great.
We are prepped. I think as a country, our riders have been lucky to have a better prep over the last year and a half to come into this. So, you know, I'm pushing good vibes out to all those American riders. We got it. This is our year.
You've got it. Yeah. Rob's got it in full confidence. Okay, two more things from me. One, I cannot believe we've got to this point of the show and not really given any airtime to Vant Iver and Doug Payne, who the horse is 16 and getting better than ever and has top five form at Kentucky anyway. So big shout out to him. And also, listeners, I've got a little wild card for you to watch that for a combination that you might not be familiar with, who I think he's pretty much going to fly the plane himself to get over there. And that would be a New Zealand rider called Jesse Campbell with Diacello. And it's a horse that is making his five-star debut, seriously flashy, absolutely beautiful, just an 11-year-old, beautiful mover, very good in the first phase, had a podium finish at Liniere at a four-star long last year, but is capable of pulling in a 20s dressage. I don't think he's going just to make up the numbers, so look out for them for a top 10 finish. Might be one that you're not overly familiar with, Jesse Campbell and Diacello. Our team, it has been so good to talk about Kentucky, our favourite memories, and a little bit more of a preview than I think we couldn't resist, could we? We just had to talk about this year. We will have lots of coverage for you. Stay with US Eventing over the entire Kentucky period. A little plug for the Equa Ratings Eventing podcast as well. We'll have a preview show and we'll be having some podcasts coming out throughout the competition as well as a review show. Dee, Rob, Max, thank you all very, very much. Rob and Max, I'm going to be so jealous that you are in Kentucky. Enjoy it. Send us photos and please eat a corn dog on my behalf.
Drink a bourbon.
A nasty carnival food.
Ugh. Yeah. I don't even know what one is. I'm off to Google it, but you know. Yeah.
Corn dog. It's a hot dog dipped in cornbread and then fried.
Yeah.
It's basically a heart attack on a stick.
There's also a legendary bourbon chicken vendor there
as
well.
Yes. Yeah,
so
okay, well really I'll let you guys go around taste testing and sending me photos. But look, 2022,
Nicole, you'll be there.
I will. Yeah. Look, enjoy it. Listeners, we hope you really enjoy all of the Kentucky coverage as well. It is going to be a brilliant weekend of sport. That is all we've got time for on the USEA official podcast this time. Do stay tuned. I think, hopefully, straight after Kentucky, the next episode might actually be a day, 2 days later than planned. But listeners, it is because we will have a fresh reaction from you with the next Team Talk episode with Eric Duvander and Jenny Autry. So I really hope it goes well for the Americans. Otherwise, that is going to be an awkward show. But look, we will get the first reaction for you. And listeners, we hope you enjoy it. Thanks very much to all of our guests and for you guys for coming along for the ride. Thanks for listening to the USEA official podcast. If you have any suggestions or feedback, then we would love to hear from you. Get in touch through any of our social media platforms at US Eventing, and don't forget to subscribe on your preferred podcast platform to make sure you don't miss an episode.